We are live and recording, and this is episode 3. Did you know podcasts don't, I think it's 90% of podcasts don't make it till episode 20?
I believe it.
And then the rest of them don't make it to episode 100. So that's, I think, our goal is to make it to episode 100. Thank you all for listening. If you are listening or watching at home, I'm Danny Tripodi, and joined with me is Upside co-founder Andrew Buckman.
What's happening?
And we got a lot of stuff to talk about.
Yeah, there is a lot happening in Disney Lorcana over the next several months. Take it away, Danny. What are we talking about today?
Yeah, for people that are playing the game and might have lived under a rock, there were some announcements by Ravensburger, and a lot of things changing. I've seen a lot of YouTube thumbnails with titles that say, "This changes everything." And they're really not wrong. This announcement does change everything, mostly because of the introduction of set rotations. The first 4 sets are going to be rotated out after August when Fabled releases.
Fabled releases, yep.
Yeah, so that's going to be huge. I know we've talked about it before, but Steel Song, Ruby Amethyst, Discard, all the top tier decks right now are mostly focused on sets 1 through 4, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to be very interesting to see that meta shift once those 4 sets go away. One of the things, too, I was thinking, when they were showing some of the new cards, I was like, oh, I mean, that dies to Brawl. That's bad. But then I was like, wait a minute, Brawl isn't going to exist. That's crazy.
Yeah, I think a lot of our at least targeted removal that we've grown accustomed to is no longer going to be in the set. Plus, you have all of the other pieces that allow each deck color combo, as we know it now, to really fire. So without those key pieces, and you can name them for every set and every color, I can't wait to see how the game is going to change. As you mentioned at the start of the podcast, like, a lot of changes coming. How the game is played is fundamentally going to change once we see sets 1 through 4 gone.
Absolutely. And I know that some of the cards are going to be reprinted and Fabled, but something that I wanted to pay attention to, or made a point to pay attention to, was the set number in the corner. So they showed like the big tank and stuff. That is still 204 out of 204.
Mm-hmm.
So there's only 204 sets, or 204 cards in that set. What stuff could they be? Like, is it all just going to be reprints of the best of collection? Like, what could we see? I know you don't have the answers, but
we did get some follow-up either tweets or in the Discord. So it was like nearly half or more than half of the cards are going to be reprints. Reprints from what specifically, we don't know. We've seen Honey Wizard as another one.
Yeah.
Honey Wizard came out in set 2.
Yep.
So that's a second Floodborne card, first one confirmed, but we've seen nothing from Inklands. We've seen nothing from Ursula's Return yet. So there's a lot for them. If it's 102-ish cards out of 204, there's a lot to draw from still.
Definitely. This could be fun. What cards would you hope to see be reprinted? I know we've also talked about some stuff like, oh, if it has a Lorcana Challenge promo card, odds are it's going to be reprinted, like Rapunzel and what's the Big Cindy?
Stouthearted.
Stouthearted, yes. But like a Whole New World, we can assume, is also going to be in that set as well. But what are some cards that you would like to see?
I would like to see, or what I think we'll see? Because I think those are two different
questions. I just think if Andrew Buckman is making the meta call for Fabled, what cards would you want to include in that?
So what comes to mind immediately are two particular cards I've really enjoyed playing with since their respective set releases. The first one is Merlin Goat from the second set, Rise of the Floodborne. That is a card that I think, between his attack, or strength rather, and his ability, he's a really fun card that's very versatile. And he wins games in Amethyst. I call it, it's goat time when you get to the stage of the game where you're at roughly like 12, 13, 14 lore. Once you see that Merlin Goat on the field, it's really hard to come back at that point if you're behind. So the goat for sure. And then the other one is going to be Robin Hood, Champion of Sherwood. That has been a card that I'm really glad I pulled an Enchanted of. Ravensburger, there's a little bit of the collector in me that doesn't want to see that card go away and lose value, so please reprint it for that reason alone. But it's a card that like serves a place still in Steel, and it's been brought back into the Steel meta with a lot of the Steel Song decks that are playing it. I'm really hoping that, personally, I see those two cards. And plus, I really love the artwork for the Enchanted Champion of Sherwood.
Yeah. I think those are great picks. And while you were talking about that, it made me think, is it going to have the same ratios of two legendaries per ink color, or because of it being a more of a core set, is it going to bump that up more? Because we could have him in there. We could also have Tragic Hero Beast, and that's already two legendaries to fill the steel slot. You know, sure. That would be unfortunate. Whereas maybe they up the legendary count and you're looking at more hits per pack. I think that would be kind of exciting. But if they are going to keep to that, then is it just one old legendary and then they save a legendary spot for a new card? I don't know how that's going to work.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think what we've seen revealed so far, Maleficent Dragon, she was the legendary from Chapter 1 in Ruby. We haven't seen what the other one's going to be yet, but super rare, Tinkerbell, we haven't seen any other enchanted revealed yet. So that's the only one. And we really didn't even get to see it revealed as part of the set. It's the set championship card, so we know it's in there.
Yeah.
I would assume so, but we don't know how that fits within the rest of the rarity distribution. Plus, and we don't need to get there yet, but let's keep in mind too, when this comes out, there are going to be two new rarities to include. Who knows the distribution of rarities and how it will work going forward?
Yeah, that's very true. I guess we should have led at the start of this podcast that there's going to be a lot of speculation. And we are just players and are big fans of the card game. And we could say something, it could be completely wrong, or who knows, we could have that crazy luck and call something that's right.
Hey, you deserve your flowers, Danny, because you correctly predicted that we would see a Jafar, and obviously it was pretty obvious in Reign of Jafar, but calling it out exactly, predicting and that how we would see a Jafar deck get played, you were a set off. You know, Zan did win a big tournament playing the Jafar wheel deck, but so we were pretty spot on. So maybe some of the things we're talking about today could turn out to be true.
It could happen. Who knows? Yeah, so what else could we talk about of the reveal? There was the announcement of Worlds, finally. The announcement that it is going to be closed Worlds. So I guess it's actually a small world after all. But yeah, I don't know how to feel about that. Because both of us, we went to the Last Chance qualifiers in Disneyland. And when I first started this card game, the thought of going to Disney World to play Lorcana occurred. But I never thought that it would get to that point. But it would have been cool still to have planned a trip to go to spectate or maybe play in some side events at Worlds. So it's a little bit disappointing. That's just how I feel. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
For sure. When they announced that it was going to be something that even if you didn't qualify for Worlds, you were going to get to be a part of that Worlds experience. They had talked about the Disney Lorcana challenges and how there was going to be this other event type, Disney Lorcana quests, very on theme for the game mechanics, and that Worlds would be a place to like really celebrate all of Lorcana that we've had up until this point. By being invite only, it's taken that away from the fans. At the very least, they still are going to stream, and I'm really glad to hear that there will be a way to get that promo. As someone who's gone to DLCs, right, getting those promo cards, it's really cool. It's a part of the experience, so I'm glad there will be a to-be-announced way to obtain that card. But also the like realist in me is glad that we're not invited, because we've spent a lot of money this year on Lorcana.
That is fair.
One, to go to Disneyland for the Last Chance qualifier and North American Championships. My wallet is thankful to not have this, but the Disney Lorcana fan in me is sorely disappointed. We don't get to be there. And I think that's in a day and age where TCGs bring back community and being together with people, the fact that for Worlds, we're going to be together, but on Twitch, it doesn't have the same kind of feeling like when we were there for Nationals to see the last game happen in round five of a best of five. We didn't even see five games. It was a 3-0. So even better. That's great. That's the kind of thing that you want to see, either going all the way to game five or ending in a 3-0. Exactly. So mixed feelings, Danny, mixed feelings.
Yeah. Another thing that came to mind while you were saying that was I blinged out my deck, and it sucks to have bought Cold Foil Diablos while we were out there. Shout out to Southside Gaming. They gave me a great deal on Cold Foil Diablos at the time. But yeah, I don't know. the thought of Diablo getting reprinted in set 9 made me think, which I don't know if he will or not, but do you think the secondhand market will spike once we find out what cards are in set 9? Because those enchanteds will be way more playable than the other ones that will be rolled to the wayside, because I don't know how many people are going to play their infinity format yet. I feel like the ones that will, like you mentioned with Champion of Sherwood, do you think those will see a spike increase once they're announced? I'm leaning on the side of possibly, and then the other ones might go down in price. I just recently picked up a second Yen Sid enchanted, because that was, he's like down to the $45 price range. I was like, brooms might be good. This was before any of this stuff broke. And now I'm kind of regretting getting two Yen Sid enchanted, but I got them cheap. But I guess to go back to my initial question, do you think we could see that uptick in price on the secondhand market for enchanted and legendaries that are announced in 9?
Let me preface by reminding you, Danny, Disney Lorcana is really the first TCG that I've been fully invested in, more so than just like a casual player or as a kid collector. So really, I would say we'd have to look to what past experiences with TCGs should tell us. And from my knowledge, and I could be wrong because, again, this is my first experience, but what I've heard through the grapevine is that it's likely prices go down for these sorts of things. And again, I could be incorrect with this. But I also feel, and this is where my wild speculation as a newer person in Disney lore comes into play, but we don't know what any of this is going to be like. I personally, the thought of set rotations has always been something that kind of gave me the ick. The idea that my cards that I just spent this value on, right, that all of a sudden are going to change all because they now have been rotated out of the format rather than getting banned away, which I know is the case in Yu-Gi-Oh, right?
Yep.
So that part bothers me that we're going to lose these cards. The other thing, though, is we don't know when they could come back. So just because a card isn't going to be reprinted in set 9, who's to say it's not going to be reprinted in a future set? We don't know those details. The third piece I'll add to this is it's Disney. So there's something special about these cards and the collectors. While Diablo is certainly a competitive card, I don't know what the collector market is for the side character bird from Sleeping Beauty that's of the villain, right? So all of that. I don't know what kind of market there is for that specific character, but there are certain things that we don't know, and Disney fans are pretty wild with this stuff. So it could be the case that with Enchanteds especially, maybe they do go up because now you have that one from, it will say on it, set 2 or set whatever set the card is from.
No, that's a good way to think about it. And possibly if you have deep pockets, maybe you want to pick up some of the cheaper first chapter enchanteds. This isn't stock advice, but I honestly feel like those first print cards, like there wasn't really any first edition cards in Lorcana like there are in Yu-Gi-Oh! And some other card games. I think those cards might be a little bit more valuable, especially if they're not going to print first chapter ever again. I feel like they don't need to now that they're going to be printing out those cards in set 9. And honestly, I didn't even think about it, but yeah, set 10 could have some cards from the past sets, set 11, set 12. I don't know if they're going to do that or not. Maybe it's every year they come out with the core constructed set, the base set, basically, and then throughout the year those add on to it, and then the last year's set gets rotated out and it starts all over again. It seems like there was a lot of thought and care put into it, so I'm excited for the future of the game. I'm excited to see what's coming down the pipe, especially, which leads me into the next segment, gargoyles, power line, like goofy movie cards. I don't want to take up too much time talking about card reveals because everybody's talking about card reveals and we're going to see more card reveals as we get further into the month. But it's so cool to finally see Darkwing Duck announced, gargoyles, and of course, goofy movie. I think that's awesome.
I was just talking with Leslie, actually, before heading over here, filling her in on all the announcements that she missed today while working, which thankfully, by the way, my 1 o'clock canceled on me or rescheduled, which allowed me to tune into today's live stream. But it's so cool to see these iconic, and no pun intended for the new rarity there, but these iconic characters and shows from our 90s childhood. Like, that's who they're playing to right now. The 30th 100%. Anniversary of Goofy Movie is this year, which is wild to think that it's the 30th anniversary of something. I'm not that old, please. But here we are. And so to see these cards, which we all knew they were coming eventually, the Disney IP stretches far. So how deep into the well they were going to pull, having revealed already that Black Cauldron was going to come out.
Yep.
Am I shocked that it's Gargoyles? No, I'm not shocked by it. But I am super stoked to be able to open up a Brooklyn or a Goliath and see how these cards are going to also interact with Darkwing Duck, which is one of my favorite Disney cartoons.
Yeah, it's just awesome. I think it's a really good time to be invested in this game and also to be a new player coming into this game. We've seen that in our local community. I feel like now this has to be really exciting to be catching up as a newer-ish player. I would say shout out to Marquise, one of our main listeners, but he's not even a new player anymore at this point. He's pretty much caught up. I bet he is super pumped for these set rotations because now he doesn't necessarily have to worry about getting every single card from the past seven sets. And I think that's a great reason to do more beginner-friendly events at local tournaments because that's only going to benefit your competitive scene in the long run, or even just in future card games. I had this conversation this weekend with John. He was talking about how Tabletop Gaming, shout out to our sponsor, Tabletop Gaming, they held a children's event, Learn How to Play Lorcana event. And I said, John, that's awesome. That's such a great idea because Tabletop is investing in their future. And I told him, I was a kid who went to Toys R Us and played in the Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh! Leagues as a kid. And then I grew up and had those memories of playing it. And I was like, I want to do this competitively. I ended up playing at a store, Comic Zone, from when I was 10 all the way up to 16, 17 religiously. Every Sunday I was there to play Yu-Gi-Oh! And that's something that was instilled with me through those small events at Toys R Us. So it's something that'll never die as long as there are more card players coming in. I think there will always be some form of competitive card games, whether it be Lorcana or not, who's to say, but I'm excited to see this for the set rotation for newer players as well as players that might have been curious. Like, I know I have a few friends from Yu-Gi-Oh! That were like, oh, what's all this Lorcana stuff about? And now I can be like, set 9 is going to be the best time to get into it.
Oh, you know? For sure.
So I hope Ravensburger can acknowledge that at least and make maybe some more entry-level friendly products like Lorcana Gateway. I think it might not have made them the most money, but I think it was one of the best entry-level products that a card game's ever released.
For sure. And I think, like, to your point about newer players to the card game and that Set 9 is going to be really inviting for them, I think Ravensburger is... maybe it's they're not listening, but they're watching, they're observing. And I'll give credence to this by the fact that we attended DLC Toronto. I was at the DLC Chicago. They start that off in the players meeting by asking, raise your hand if this is your first TCG. And there are tons of hands that go up in this room. So I think they are aware that the game is filled with both very competitive, long-time TCG players looking to get on the next hot new thing, which at the time was Lorcana, now 2 years ago, which is pretty wild to say. But then at the same time, there's all these new people who would maybe consider themselves TCG adjacent. Maybe they play board games. Maybe they're just into the Disney IP or whatever it might have been. But the game pulled them in so much so that they would spend money on a competitive ticket with 1,000+ players in it. I think that speaks volume. So Ravensburger, they've got a lot to handle now, two very different types of people, but I think they will do more. Another product reveal tie back to what's coming out is they're going to have with Fabled a collector's box. So similar to the gift box idea that they've done in previous set releases, this one is more geared towards collectors. So specifically those who are less interested in the competitive aspect of the game, but just want to collect the cool, shiny new Disney character cards or previous cards, this will allow them to start that. And the special promo in it is Tinkerbell, which is a set one staple card. They're listening to us, but they're also watching us. And I think picking up what we're doing as players.
I like that. I also like to think that Ravensburger's watching. You know, big brother is watching.
Always watching.
Yeah. And that's a good thing. That really is a good thing, because coming from another card game like Yu-Gi-Oh!, I often felt near the end of my competitive stint as a Yu-Gi-Oh! Player was Konami doesn't really care about me, and they're just going to do this cycle over and over again of printing really good cards, and then they're really expensive, and then they get banned, and then the cycle repeats. And you either you jump on board or you play an anti-meta deck, which is what I spent the last few years of my Yu-Gi-Oh! Career doing, and you're not going to get that far. Decks back then, I think, were roughly around like the $600 price mark, because you had to do your extra deck and side deck and stuff. But it's such a breath of fresh air to not have to shell out over $500 for a card game. You know, it can get expensive if you just want to buy packs, but also I think Lorcana players have been very fortunate that the secondhand market has been very entry-friendly, I would say, to a point. I think the most expensive cards are usually the meta-defining ones, like the Maui Half-Sharks, and at the start of this meta, the Tamatoa shiny, if it was so shiny or whatever. But realistically, like, I've looked at so many decks on Ink Decks, and most of the meta decks don't break $350. So it's not the end of the world. It can get expensive if you're playing Amber, unfortunately, because of Rapunzel. But it's nice to see that there's other colors. This weekend, the deck that I ran, I think, was $120 at the most, which was nice. But I don't know.
That is one of my hopes with the idea of new rarities and alternate art cards, is give a chase card. I think this is big in Pokemon, right? Where there are all these different versions of the same card. So even the most competitively played used card, you can get fairly cheap. It's the chase version, the blinged out one, that you and I will likely try to get into our decks if that's the case. But at least it means that if you want the meta card, you're not dishing out $50, $60, $70, which it's the case right now, because whether it's the cold foil or even the just regular version, you need it for that deck, right? The Tamatoa at the start of set 7 was definitely that card. The fact that Rapunzel from chapter 1, but if you're playing an Amber deck without it, it's one of your main draw mechanics. There are those staple cards that I think it's a little rough. But here we are with set 9, reprints, all of that. It might make it easier in the future. So decreased prices is what I'm hoping for. So two new rarities, right, get introduced to the game. I think this is important, not only to piggyback off of the card market, because that's a part of why I think they're introducing this, but also to give something to chase after. Because right now, when you open up a pack of Lorcana, unless you're getting, as we already talked about, some of those legendary cards that are staples for competitive, or really cool enchanted, because I think back to set 7 that just came out, there is an Anna Elsa, I forget the name of the action. It's not even like really played Sapphire action card. It's the song, does something putting cards into your inkwell. In any case, it's like over $150 for the enchanted, and it's purely because
all
of
All is Found.
All is Found.
Gotcha.
Yeah. It's because it's a Frozen card, right? Those characters, if you were into it, you need Anna and Elsa and everything you got. So in any case, when you open up a pack, you don't really get a lot of value, or isn't something that you're chasing after. But with the introduction of Fabled, we get two new rarities, Epic and Iconic. The Epic rarity is going to be more rare than a legendary. So what, we get roughly 2 to 6 in a box, depending on how
on a good day.
On a good day
or bad day, it's 2.
So more rare than legendary, but not as rare as enchanted. And then you'll have Iconic, which is more rare than enchanted, and they're only giving 2 cards, at least in Fabled, this alternative art. And it's the Mickey and Minnie that they've previewed from the artwork. It looks awesome. It's going to have the hollow foiling effect that's on the golden Mickey card, which I've never seen a golden Mickey in person, so no idea what that looks like. Maybe one day, or not, if that was just for the first round of things. But in any case, I digress. The point being is, these two new rarities, will I ever see an Iconic card? Probably not. Will I pull? Probably.
What are you talking about? We know for a fact that our teammate Josh Chubb is going to pull. He's going to be the first one to pull an iconic card, and then we can look at it over his shoulder before he sends it off to get graded.
Yeah, I misspoke. When I said we, Danny, it was the in-present we.
Yeah, us. Not I've ever seen
like
it. Yeah.
The team, the upside, which, yes, Chubbs will open up at least three iconics. Yeah, he's good to, you know, if you need someone to open packs for you, that's the
best
guy to call
choice.
Upon, for sure. You know, these two new cards that now the epic ones, I don't know how I feel about these yet, Danny. I think this will be, I need to see in person, because at least the first batch of these in future sets will be different, but it's just going to be the same art that we've already seen.
Yeah.
Expanded with the same gloss effect as legendaries and a holo.
It was giving me when they showed it off, like the D100 foiled set that they did. I looked at it and I was like, oh, that's basically what they did for that, just the actual artwork, which is cool. But yeah, it didn't really impress me too much, I guess. Maybe it's just because the Elsa is beautiful artwork, but it's not the Elsa you want to see. It's still cool, but I'll be grateful if I pull it. I just haven't been blown away yet by the first epic reveal.
And even just my pull rates with legendaries and enchanteds, if it's somewhere in the middle there, probably not seeing a lot of these anyways.
Yeah.
Too, so
I think Ursula's it was something deep trouble.
Yep.
The Ursula Illumineer quest was so much fun that I'm super looking forward to getting the Palace Heist Illumineer's quest, just so we can show it off on this channel and do maybe like a super hard playthrough. I mentioned it earlier in our Discord, but I would love to, especially if it's going to be like a three-player cooperative thing, maybe we can ramp up Jafar and make him a little bit more difficult and see if we could do an upside team tries to take down Jafar to steal his crown back and do a palace heist thing. I think that would be really fun.
I like that. Now, would we, just to stay on this for a moment,
yeah,
are we going with like meta competitive decks, or do we try to theme them to make it a little more fun for the set?
It might be more fun to theme it. I don't know if we just stick with set 8 and just do Jafar, Reign of Jafar. And we'll also, I'm assuming we'll get 2-player decks in that Illumineer's quest like Ursula's, so we could see what those decks look like, maybe enhance them a little bit, and then try to play it on the hardest difficulty. Maybe we could have somebody that just plays Jafar, because I know when I did Ursula's quest, I was jumping back and forth between playing and also acting as Ursula, but maybe we could just have somebody kind of like a dealer. I think everything that I wanted out of the first Illumineer's quest, they've answered, and that was mostly having packaging that is like a board game that you can put back all in one box, and it can sit neatly on a shelf. Like, I didn't deconstruct my first Illumineer's quest. It's still like in its own separate deck box, but I was upset. I was like, the box is so pretty and it feels bad, but I had to tear into it to get to it, and then it had to be trashed.
Listen, I have defended Ravensburger.
Yeah.
Through their entire journey in Lorcana, with the main point being, this is a puzzle company, people.
Yeah.
Let them work out the kinks of this game, figure out all the stuff, because they are not a TCG company. They were a puzzle company. But then they come out with this Illumineer's quest, and they put it in a flimsy cardboard box.
Yeah.
I've purchased Ravensburger puzzles. They come in a solid box. You play any of Ravensburger's high-quality board games, throw out Villainous there.
Yeah.
High-quality box that I don't even keep the cards in the boxes anymore, but I have the boxes to be on display on a bookshelf because they're that good. So how do you do this, Ravensburger, and not give us a good cardboard box? And that's a thing in TCG, is you want a good high quality cardboard box. So thank goodness we are getting a high quality box, which I don't know, Danny, if you got to see this or not with the stream, because this kind of happened at the end. They showed the inside of it a little bit more. Ooh. But there's even artwork on the inside of the box. Wow. Like chef's kiss.
Yeah,
that I love. We like a good box.
The small little details. It's true. Yeah, we really love a good box, something that's going to hold up and not fall apart like the first chapter troves. But yeah, that's one of those things that's, wow, Ravensburger is watching. That's what it comes back to. They're listening, and they are hearing people talk about this because it was a big oversight. It really does feel more like a board game. If you don't touch any of the cards from the set and just treat it as a board game, it basically is. So I'm excited for Palace Heist, and I think it will be a fun little cooperative thing that could be a good tool to introduce friends to Lorcana.
Oh, for sure.
Might be curious. What's all this Lorcana stuff about?
Yeah, it's, and I've done this before already with friends coming over to play Lorcana, and it is an easy enough game to pick up. What I've done often is to play like open hand, so everyone just puts their hands down. You can see what everyone's doing. Go through a couple hands like that, rounds, and then you say, okay, let's play one for real now that we understand the gist of the game. But these Illuminaire's quests really allow you to play a much more insular version of Lorcana in a way that is, and this is Leslie's big thing, cooperative, where you're not working against your friends or ganging up on someone, which tends to be me in the play group. I'm sure you as well, Danny, and yours.
Yeah.
Ones that, you know, I guess, oh, because we're good at games means we just got to take you out first or whatever. Fine. Okay. Once again, I digress. Point being, it's a really great way to bring people into the game. And then once you say, oh, by the way, if you liked this, there's like a more one-on-one competitive level of this that we could get into. And who knows? That could be their entry point into Lorcana.
Never been a better time. So speaking of never been a better time, I think it's never been a better time to talk about this weekend and everything that we experienced in our first and second set champs for set 7. Do you want to go in the details? Or do you want me to lead in that we met up on Saturday, carpooled to Just Games Rochester. Shout out to them. And it was a pretty good day for me.
One person made top 8.
Yeah, we had me, you, Brandon, and Anthony from the upside. And unfortunately, I was the only one to top 8 out of our team. Also, unfortunately, my top 8 opponent happened to be running Steel Song, and I was running Amethyst Emerald. And a deck's really hard to beat with Amethyst Emerald. It's a really good deck. So, I got knocked out in top 8, which was a little disappointing. But also at the same time, it was a long day. And we ended up getting home at, 11?
Yeah, it's pretty late still.
So it wasn't too bad. I honestly, shout out to the Rochester community because I met so many awesome people out there, as well as people out in Albany and Binghamton. There were a ton of people that were at that event. I think it was 31 players.
Yeah.
The store was awesome. They didn't get their promos in, which is all right, because I don't mind taking a trip out to Rochester. It's only an hour away from us, but it was really cool to see something that I had spent all night preparing for, literally all night. The night before, Friday night, I stayed up till 5 because somebody on Lord Canito beat me with Ruby Amethyst. The deck that I was planning on playing just 2-0'd me, and it sent me into a downward spiral of, what do I do? How do I beat this? And it ended up falling down the rabbit hole into Emerald Amethyst. It's like more of a mid-range tempo deck, but I honestly was pretty happy with my results. I never really played that color combination before, and there isn't really a lot to it other than I'm going to play a guy and maybe combo it with Crab and then bounce it back with Mim Fox, or maybe I play Elsa, tap down their guy, attack them, and then try and control their board and win from there by questing out. So it was a very interesting build. We'll put it up on the screen for the people watching on YouTube. For the audio listeners, sorry, you'll have to go to our YouTube page.
That's what happens in podcasts, that, you know, cross media. The podcast listeners, they know, they're used to it.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about your experience?
Yeah. Honestly, I didn't make top 8, which was disappointing, but the tournament was still fun, and my 3 losses, which, you know, knocked me out, were mirror matches. I played Steel Song, and I'm pretty sure all of my opponents made top 8. I know Pete did. That's not true. Cody did not, but he's a set champion winner.
Yep.
To lose to him felt, okay, yep, I'm playing another good player. And then your round 5 opponent was my round 4 opponent,
Matt.
And did he make top 8, or were you, I can't remember how that all shook out.
So Matt was a sweetheart from Albany. Shout out to you.
Yeah, shout out Matt.
He and I were kind of like, we're at table 3, but Matt is, I think he was 5th going into this, and I was 7th place going into round 5. And he was like, do you want to split? And the other players that were lower than us were basically waiting for us to decide if we were going to play it out. And eventually the players at the lower tables were like, oh, you know, we'll roll for it. And Matt was like, yeah, no, I don't feel comfortable doing that. And I was like, yeah, he's right. I think we should play. And we ended up playing it out. Game one went pretty long. Game two, I somehow managed to get a game because that was, I think, the first and only Steel song that I managed to get a win in all weekend. And then game three, I was saved by the bell because I was not going to win game three. And we ended up splitting, which I think winning that game two really helped me get into top eight at that point, just because of where I was ranked. I don't really know how Melee works. I don't know if anybody does, but I feel like him being up a game and me coming back in game two helped my points over the people that were deciding if they should intentionally draw or play it out. And I don't know, it ended up working out.
So I'm glad you got to make top eight. And yeah, like I said, while I was sad to have not made it, the fact that my three opponents, again, mirror match, two of them were people who made top eight. I'm pretty sure even Pete was in the top two.
Yeah.
So Steel Song was a present deck, and I was playing the right deck, maybe not the right version of it. That was probably something that I realized. And this has happened in Set Champs before, too, where there's a couple different versions of a deck. You substitute a few different cards. I was running a deck more, I would say, a lower to the ground in the sense that I had four daisies as opposed to a split that's occurring right now between like Daisy and Naveen.
Yeah.
And it could be one Naveen and three daisies. It could be two and two. I think Matt was playing two and two in his deck. Matt also had a Grab Your Sword, which is one of those cards which every time I play Steel Song, I go, oh, I wish I had Grab Your Sword, because there's these wide boards. And then I never see a wide board, and I all go, oh, Grab Your Sword, it's awful, terrible, take it out of the deck. And then lo and behold, a Grab Your Sword is what takes me out in game number two against Matt. So there you go. Like, it's one of those things where I think I played not my best either, definitely made some mistakes, but it was the first set championship. We got more to go. I know you went to a second one, played the same deck, right?
So yeah.
With some mods.
I was excited because I had learned from another Emerald Amethyst player out in Rochester, Pat, shout out to you. He actually gave me his list. I asked, I was like, can I see your list? And he showed it to me, and he was like, the Emerald Chromacon is the answer to beat Steel Song. And I was like, really? And I saw him play it against me, I think, game two. And it's a vicious card if you don't have any item removal in your deck. And he 2-0'd me. I think he was the only one to 2-0 me on Saturday, but I was so excited to play Emerald Chromacon, and I took out one Lyle. I was going to take out both, but I really like Lyle Tiberius Rourke in Emerald Amethyst. I think I would almost up it again. I feel like Lyle really helped me out on Saturday, and I didn't get to see him as much on Sunday. But besides the point, Sunday I went with our buddy John from Tabletop Gaming. We went out to another sponsor store of ours, Storyteller CNY, and I want to say there was 27 or 28 players there, and it was a great tournament. Not so great for me. Game one, I paired up against Mike from our Binghamton sister team down there. Shout out to Ben Vamos Cosmos. And yeah, he juggled me with Purple Steel, and it was the most consistent Purple Steel deck. Mike is a builder. He does some crazy brews, and he was like, this is all you got to do. You run four copies of 15 of the best cards in the deck, and you're going to see them. He actually took out two cards to play Gantu because he heard about Steel Song being heavily played in the area. So he had two Gantus, which he didn't really use against me because my deck wasn't going to do anything with songs. But yeah, super, super good deck. He was able to shift onto the Fast Flyer Tink on turn four and just decimated my board, and there was nothing I could do. And then that led me to round two, where I played against, I believe her name was Katie. She was running Steel Song, which I was not ready for. And
didn't see that Chromacon?
I didn't see the Chromacon. And you know what's even crazier? Game one lasted like 35-ish minutes. And she played all four of her Whole New Worlds.
Wow.
It was rough, to say the least. I was inking any card that could draw me card. Like, Friends on the other side was just going into my inkwell because I wasn't going to use it. And I could not get enough momentum to keep cards on the board and quest out to get to 20 before Katie was overwhelming my board. She dropped two big Cindies. I think she dropped the second big Cindy to end the game. But between that, she had dropped probably three Prince Naveens on me. She played almost every kill spell in her list, and it was a tough game one. And then game two ended up going to time, and I was at 17 lore, I think. I'll have to look at my lore book, but I came up to 16 or 17 lore, and I just could not get... If I could go bounce, maybe there would be a chance and tack something, but it just didn't end that way, and I ended up going 0-2, and then I played one more round, and the third and final round was against Anna, who I believe is Storyteller's local, and she was playing a Sugar Rush Speedway deck, combo deck, Ruby Amber. And man, that was another horrible matchup for Amethyst Emerald. There was a point, and like I understand how the deck works, but the thing that I realized shortly was like, oh, I lose unless I can destroy her Minnie Mouse, the pirate Minnie Mouse that gets back a location when you ink a card, because I was stuck in a vicious cycle of her basically always having the starting line, the Sugar Rush Speedway starting line, and I needed to remove that so that the next turn she wouldn't be able to get finish line and then send them to finish line. So it was a matter of trying to maintain her board and also take out a 5 damage location every turn until I could draw Elsa, and I was not seeing Elsa to take out the mini, and there's no other item or there's no other character destruction in that deck. So I was like, oh, this kind of sucks. And she was playing the hay. I think it might be from set 3. It's a red hay that when it moves to a location, you lose a lore. So I had started out with Cursed Merfolk, and I was questing going up to 6. And then you could see my lore pad. I went down to 4 and then 2 and then 0. And she pretty much just kept me at 0 the entire time. And there was nothing I could do about it. It was terrible matchup. She 2-0'd me. And then I said, you know what? I'm going to take the top 8 appearance on Saturday, and we're just going to forget about this. This happened on Sunday. And that was something I wanted to talk to you about. When you're playing in these tournaments and these set champs, there are so many factors that decide your final placement. And some of it is completely out of your control, so you always want to remind yourself of that. If Andrew had played the decks that I played against on Saturday, I probably wouldn't have top 8'd. If I played the 3 Steel Song decks that you played against, you took those off my plate. And that was just down to pure chance. I think of how many tournaments there are like that. That's, wow, I really lucked out because I didn't have to play this deck that I'm really bad into. And there's ways to mitigate that. You know, playing a lot of test hands against the deck and trying to increase your chances against it if you think the field is going to be that, but there's so many other obstacles that you can't really...
What about the dice roll, Danny? Because that was my worst enemy on Saturday, too, is I didn't win a single dice roll until my last match, where it did not matter. You know what?
It's funny that you say that. I went 0-5 on the dice roll, and I managed to win on the draw, and then in top 8... We didn't do top seed goes first, rolled for it, and I won the dice roll in top 8, and then I got 2-0'd. Yeah. So, I don't know. It's very interesting.
Not to go on a side tangent with this, but after Pixelborn went away, spent a lot of time on Inktable.
Inktable.
Practicing against the AI, and the AI is definitely not as good as a real human player that knows what they're doing with the game. But one thing I always did was made sure I went on the draw. So I spent a lot of time in that kind of post-Pixelborn era playing against AI on the draw to practice. And I think that was really good, because a lot of times when you do lose the dice roll, you feel bad that you're going second.
Yeah.
But there's some benefits still. You get that extra card and you get to see what your opponent's playing and doing first. Yep. That was like a strategy in the best of two format at DLCs was let your opponent go first.
Yep.
In the first ones, you could see what their gameplay was and then
you go
pivot
first
in game two.
Yeah,
so there's benefits still.
Absolutely.
To it. So you really want to keep an open mind about going. Don't be shot down by the dice roll.
Don't be a doomer. Oh, yeah. It's over. I lost the dice roll. You just make do with what you got, and you got this.
No, and I'll share really quickly, too. Like, my first match against Pete, game one, he got all the way to 19 lore. And this is a Steel Song versus Steel Song matchup. And I could have folded 2-3 lore before that, being like, God, there's no way I'm going to come back. But it was the first round. I was like, I'm not going down without a fight. And I held him off at 19 all the way until I got to 20-1 game one. It's possible. You got to play it out sometimes. See where it takes you.
Absolutely. And going back off of that tangent, so Storytellers, CNY was our first store set champs in the area. And we want to congratulate the winner of that set champs, Luke Campbell. He piloted Ruby Sapphire. And I messaged him after and congratulated him. I love him and his brother Bailey. They're two great players that kind of emerged. I want to say, was it set five? I think Bailey came in set five and he took me out in top four with his blue steel list. And then
I beat him. Thanks, Bailey.
Yeah. But I was so excited to see Luke win. I know he had been playing Ruby Amethyst before in set six, and it was really cool to see him doing well with Ruby Sapphire. And I believe he ended up taking down Ben in the finals of that set champs. And because he won, he is getting free entry to our 2K tournament on June 14th, sponsored by Unplugged Gaming, Tabletop Gaming, Dame Games, Storyteller CNY, as well as Misfit Games. It's going to be an awesome time if you're in the Syracuse or Central New York area. Check it out on forms.theupside.quest is the registration form. Or if you just go to theupside.quest is our website. As soon as you load in, there's a button right there that'll give you all the information you need about our 2K tournament, as well as on that forms website, there is a sort of FAQ about the breakdown of everything that's going to be happening, including hourly raffles. We'll be streaming that day, and each game will be uploaded to our YouTube channel after. So if you get featured on the stream, you can go back and replay it and be like, oh dang, I shouldn't have done that play. Oh dang it, if I only did this. No, but we'll be streaming, we'll be hosting hopefully 64 of the most competitive local Disney Lorcana players in our area.
We might do some side events. I think we're still trying to figure out what it looks like in terms of participation. And
absolutely. And having networked with so many players over the weekend, we did have a handful more people sign up, which is awesome to see. I know it's a little hard right now because we're a month away from the event and people are in set champs mode, but it's going to be really exciting. We're giving away $2,000 worth of Reign of Jafar. So it'll be the most recent set. I think first place will get two cases of Jafar, which is awesome. So if you don't really get a lot of Jafar cards 2 weeks before the tournament, if you win it all, you'll be set.
Probably your full playset of everything you need. Maybe missing some Enchanteds in there.
It should be a good day for whoever wins that, and I'll be interested to see. Also, since we are still in set champ season, if you win a set champs at Dame Games, Tabletop Gaming, Unplugged Gaming, or Misfits, you will be entered for free, courtesy of those stores as their set champs.
Well, and I'm excited too, Danny, for the broadcast of this tournament, because I agreed early on to not play to be the kind of color caster commentator for this event. And I'm actually really sad to not be playing because I love to play Lorcana. But to get to bring what we're doing, which is pretty cool, it's a tournament by players for the players. There are probably people from all across the country, the world, who want to tune in to Lorcana whenever they can. And we're going to be providing that. So we'll be streaming the games, as Danny mentioned. I'll be providing some commentary for it. Shout out to Spessy, actually. He's another content creator out there in the Lorcana world. He posted a video today about his disappointment with not being picked to be on the world's broadcast.
Yeah.
He's a fantastic commentator. So, to be honored and privileged to be that for our team in this first tournament we're putting on. There's some great folks out there in this space, so I got to make sure that I'm living up to their standards of putting on a high quality show for you all. So even if you can't join us there at the event, which we would love for you to be there, tune in on our social media for that live stream so you can be a part of the experience still.
Yeah, maybe we can get Specy to tune in to our Twitch stream on twitch.tv/the_upside_team. Was there anything that you wanted to talk about?
We talked a lot of stuff, Lorcana.
Yeah, we did.
Talked a lot. Let's leave it at that.
Yeah, so thank you to all of you who listened into today's podcast episode or watched it on YouTube. Be sure to follow us on all of our socials at the_upside_team. And check us out online at theupside.quest. And we will see you in the next one.
Happy questing.